Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Amerigo Resources 2005 Financial Results Conference Call. I would now like to turn the meeting over to Mr. Michael Kuta, General Counsel and Corporate Secretary for the company. Please go ahead, Mr. Kuta.
Thank you, Melanie. Good morning, everyone. Good afternoon to the folks in Toronto. Before we begin our presentation, let me caution you that our comments and discussions will include forward-looking statements and information within the meaning of applicable securities legislation. Although we believe that the anticipated future results, performance, or achievements expressed or implied by the forward-looking statements and information are based on reasonable assumptions and expectations, you should not place undue reliance on forward-looking statements and information because they involve unknown and known risks, uncertainties, and other factors which may cause the actual results, performance, or achievements of the company to differ materially from anticipated future results, performance, or achievements expressed or implied by such forward-looking statements and information. You should review our press release issued last night and our other documents filed with the securities authorities in Canada, including our annual information form under the heading Description of the Business Risk Factors. These documents describe the material factors and assumptions that were applied in drawing the conclusions and making the forecasts and projections as reflected in the forward-looking statements and information, and the material factors that could cause our actual results, performance, or achievements to differ materially. We undertake no obligation to update or revise any forward-looking statements or information made in this presentation. With me are Ms. Aurora Davidson, our CFO, and Mr. Steven Dean, our Chairman. I'd like to introduce you now to Mr. Dean, who will begin with a review of the 2005 financial results, to be followed by a Q&A session after that presentation. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike. Hi, everybody. Amerigo, as we know it, began life in July 2003 with the acquisition of MVC for $16.6 million in cash, plus a note of $3.4 million. Since then, we've repaid debt inherited at the time of acquisition of $2.5 million, ramped up copper production, brought on the construction and commissioning of a molybdenum processing plant in record time of 5 months to take full advantage of the high prevailing moly prices, invested approximately $38.2 million in the moly plant and copper plant expansions over that time, all from cash flow and without taking on any long-term bank debt, in addition to paying in September last year a $3.2 million semiannual dividend. We plan to invest some cash flow, a further $14 million in new capital in 2006. In 2004, we achieved an increase of approximately 530% increase in net earnings, and in 2005, a 79% increase in net earnings over 2004. We expect to increase our production in 2006 to 40 to 45 million pounds of copper and 900,000 to 1 million pounds of moly, ultimately ramping up to an annualized rate in excess of 60 million pounds of copper by the end of 2007. I'd like to review more closely our 2005 results. Net earnings after tax for the year ended December 31, 2005, were just a little under $18 million, as I said, 79% higher than the previous year. Those net earnings in 2005 are after year-end adjustments of $770,000, which reflects the fact that we lost a debate on a couple of items with our auditors on expenses which we were amortizing during the year. Those items principally were a signing bonus in connection with a new labor contract, which has a term of 44 months, which we signed during the year, which enabled us to lock in those labor rates. We took the view that that was something that we could amortize over the period of that labor contract. Our auditors differed, and we lost. We also had some mill line is that we believe were properly amortizable, and they wanted us to expense them. So those items were expensed in Q4, but were actually related to the full year. That number was also reflecting a settlement provision, which was effectively an expense or a reduction of earnings of $1.7 million in Q4 due to lower year-end moly prices. I suspect most analysts were looking to the higher copper price in the quarter determining what Q4 results might be, but may have failed to take into account the lower moly price at year-end. If you factor these adjustments that I referred to, all of which were expensed in Q4, Q4 was in fact a stronger quarter than Q3. Cash flow from operations was $21.87 million for the year. Copper production in fiscal 2005 was a little under 30 million pounds compared to 31 million pounds in 2004. Copper was down due to, firstly, poor metallurgical characteristics of the fresh tailings we received from El Teniente during the year, something over which we have no control of, but reflect, we think, the fact that Teniente itself is ramping up its production, and what is key is the rate of development of mineable ore. The material did not come from where they told us they were scheduling the ore to come from, which would be material which has strong or positive metallurgical characteristics, principally high sulfide ore. So that was part of the reason for the year, and as I said, it related to the fresh tailings, what we call the fresh tailings. Secondly, no doubt we were disappointed with the results of Collywood's extraction rates, and that's something we do take responsibility for. By way of explanation, there are only so many projects that site management can properly focus on. We had a very big year with copper plant expansion, moly plant construction and commissioning. Our clear instructions to site management were to focus on achieving successful moly plant construction within time. In fact, we asked them to shorten the time period to 2 months, which they did achieve, in addition to successful commissioning, something which is more of an art than a science in terms of moly metallurgy. They did an outstanding job of not only commissioning that early, but also in accordance with our best possible outcome in terms of moly recovery. I think the other thing to note is that we are pioneering to a certain extent here, particularly in terms of the extraction of the underwater wet tailings. The prototype worked, as we've reported in the last year or so, but for a number of reasons, didn't scale up. Unfortunately, after 20-odd years of experience in this business, it happened. We now have two methodologies which, together, we have built in significant buffer capacity. Both methodologies together should theoretically achieve significantly more than the targeted 45,000 ton a day recovery. And they are a monitoring methodology and a submersible unit, a submersible extraction vehicle. Approximately two-thirds of the 200 million tons of Collywood material is dry, and the balance is wet and underwater. For the wet tailings, we have, as I said, this submersible extraction vehicle, which is really a modification of the previous pump dredge technique that we were using as a prototype early in the year. The issue with that old prototype was not that we couldn't move the volume of material and pump the volume of material. That was well and truly achieved, but the percentage of solids that we expected were much lower than we anticipated. We now have what we call a submersible vehicle, which after trials over the last 2 months with modifications which are underway, we are comfortable we'll perform to the specifications by the end of March. And simplistically, this vehicle, rather than just allowing a pump to suck this material on the bottom of the dam, we have an auger mechanism which will feed the pump directly as it moves across the bottom of the dam. For the dry material, we always plan to extract this with monitors, and as I said, that's by far the majority of the material. And this plan is well and truly on the original schedule to have this monitoring equipment commissioned this quarter. The first monitor is installed. It was installed a week or two ago, and apart from some minor bugs which you can expect, like motors burning out and things, are performing to expectations. The other three units will be installed over the next 3 months, along with the construction of the bund wall, which will keep the area dry during the winter wet season. Moving back to production, on a positive note, moly production, as I've said earlier, for the year was 631,000 pounds, 26% higher than our original projection. And frankly, where most of our profit is generated on a unit of production basis. Cash costs were 60 cents a pound, recognizing the benefit of the moly byproduct credit, and that was despite significantly higher smelter and refinery charges, which the industry-wide has had to absorb in its cost. And as an observer of some of our other fellow copper producers, that increase in cost is well and truly being seen by all producers. We have had the good benefit of being able to commission our moly plant during this period and being able to more than offset those increases in cost, which relate to, as I said, the smelter refinery, the increase in cost, increase in energy, increase in other consumables. Total costs were 93 cents compared to 88 cents. That difference was largely due to the higher royalty payments to Teniente, which in turn would relate to the higher copper prices. It's a fairly we have a fairly unique, as most people who follow us would agree, fairly unique cost base. Whilst there is a marginal increase in cost as copper price goes higher, the good news is that as and when the copper price falls, our costs also fall with that lower copper price. We look at that royalty as effectively a mining cost, which will go to zero at low copper prices below 80 cents. Capital plan expenditures for the moly plant and the expansion of the copper processing facility, as I mentioned, were approximately $26.7 million, all funded from cash flow. On the corporate front, we acquired last week a 19.7% stake in Chariot Resources for investment purposes. We like Chariot management and the potential of the company's Marcona project. Finally, on the dividend front, on the 16th of February, the board declared a final dividend of 4.5 cents per share, payable on April 7 to shareholders of record as of March 31, and that takes our total dividends paid over the last 12 months to 9 cents per Canadian per share. I'm now pleased to take any questions.
Thank you. We will now take questions from the telephone lines. If you have a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you are using a speakerphone, please lift the handset and then press star 1. If at any time you wish to cancel your question, please press the pound sign. Please press star 1 at this time if you have a question. There will be a brief pause while participants register. Thank you for your patience. The first question is from Robert Baird of Irvine. Please go ahead.
Yes, thanks for the good report. Previously, you had discussed other tailing ponds, and I'm wondering if there are any negotiations regarding that.
Robert, as I think we've discussed and before, that there is a large tailings pond of the order of 500 million tons adjacent to the Koliwez Dam. It's called Kekene. Yes, it is. It is the prospective for recovery. We have had preliminary discussions with Teniente in connection with the recovery of those. We've done some limited metallurgical tests. We need to do some more, and that is one of the things that's on our agenda. It's not something in the short term. It's something that will be progressed over time. You know, our primary management focus is on achieving our ramp up to in excess of 60 million pounds of copper by year end 2007.
Okay, what do you expect for copper production in 06? Any ideas on that? And second question regarding that is, are you doing any hedging now?
Second question first, no, we're not doing any hedging. And as I said earlier in my remarks, we expect 40 to 45 million pounds of copper production and 900,000 to a million pounds of moly. I suspect we're being conservative there, but I think you'd rather us be conservative. I suspect most analysts will have us at the higher end of those ranges.
Okay, thank you. Last question is, in the Q3 conference call or thereabouts, you mentioned a share buyback. You know, what's the status of that? And how does that Chariot investment relate to that?
The buyback was announced when the stock price was of the order of $1.60. It's today of approximately $2.70. We clearly have to review the merits of that versus other potential applications of our capital, including investments such as Chariot, and we will continue to do so.
Great. Thank you very much. That's all.
Thank you. The following question is from Raymond Goldie of Toronto. Please go ahead.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Mine's a similar question to the preceding one on the Chariot investment, and I wondered if that signals a change in your dividend policy. Previously, you've suggested that your long-term goal was to pay out about one-third of earnings as dividends.
Thanks, Ray. Each semi-annual dividend we will consider as a board in accordance with our stated dividend policy. But I would like to see the dividend maintained even as we grow our business.
Maintained at the current level or maintained at one-third of earnings, you mean?
Well, as I said, we would continue to manage our dividend policy in accordance with that policy, and that policy says that we would like to achieve a dividend level of at least 30% of earnings.
Thank you very much.
I think you'll agree that the current position is consistent with that policy.
Would you like to speculate any more then on your intentions with respect to Chariot and Marcona?
Ray, we remain a supportive shareholder. We have a good relationship with management. The chairman is a fellow Aussie. And the president, Uli Rath, both Klaus and I know well from Antamina when we were at Techaminco. Uli Rath and Klaus sat on the joint venture board for a number of years together. We have no current intention to increase our ownership in Chariot. We like the asset, and we'll be a keen observer of progress over the course of the year.
Great. I think you've chosen a good asset.
Thank you.
Thank you. Once again, please press star 1 at this time for any questions or comments. The following question is from Ted Douglas of Kelowna. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Just to clarify, you used the phrase final dividend will be paid as of holders of March 31st. Can you confirm, is this policy being canceled, or it's quarter to quarter, or semi-annual by semi-annual?
If, this was a video conference, Ted, you'd be able to see our corporate secretary sitting there smiling at me. Perhaps it's a terminology issue, but I'm familiar with the terminology of interim and final dividend being the second part of an annual dividend. No, it's not intended to mean that there is no more. It's intended to mean it's the second part of a semi-annual dividend.
Thank you.
Thank you. The following question is from Michael Lamb of Toronto. Please go ahead.
All right. The $1.7 million charge for molybdenum, walk me through that. Is that because you book moly revenue in Q3, but you don't realize in Q4, and that $1.7 is an adjustment to Q3 realizations?
Yeah. I have absolute sympathy for any analyst who covers a base metal producing company, because even with all the access to the information flows that we have, the challenges of properly accounting under today's accounting standards for monthly movements in metal prices is significant. The simplistically, and I have to preface that because it isn't simple, but simplistically, that provision or charge is relates to the fact that that moly is priced on a 3 month forward on a basis 3 months after the date of delivery, and that's just industry convention. We'd love to make it more simple, but that's the way the roasters and smelters like it. And what happens is that we deliver the material and we price it provisionally in the month of delivery. So in the case of moly, at the average published price.
Final published price.
And there is a site for that you can check. And it's the Platts price, right?
It's the Platts price.
And then 3 months later, we get the actual price once that's known. But in the meantime, the accounting standards require us to make on a monthly basis adjustments to all moly deliveries that have not yet been priced as a final price, based on any movement between the date that the material was delivered and the month end, and in this case the year end or quarter end. So we have moly prices as we have disclosed in our quarterly release, in a year end release, in Q3 in the range of is $32 a pound.
Mm-hmm.
By the end of the year, that was down to $25 a pound or thereabouts.
Mm-hmm.
And so that difference of $5 a pound, not just for 1 month, but for 3 months' production, has to be reflected in our accounting results.
Okay.
Then, in the meantime, by the way, the moly price then fell to around $21 or $22 in early January.
Mm-hmm.
And then we understand since then, in February, it's back up $25, $26, $27. So it's a little bit of a roller coaster ride, and it makes our job as management is difficult to forecast. Let alone, as I said, I'm sympathetic for the analysts who follow us and all other base metal producers, because these swings can impact significantly on our accounting results.
So at year end, the moly price ended around 25.
25, and then the first week of January was about 21. Yeah.
Okay.
Let's bounce back again.
Is there just two questions on this? On the first one is that can you maybe take a 5% reserve when you do your accrual? So instead of having a negative adjustment, you have positive adjustments at year end. And B, that assuming that obviously moly prices are higher than, let's say, the $25 in Q1, then you'll have an upward adjustment. And, I guess in that respect, how do you figure out how much is the adjustment versus how much would be unusual? Here it's easy. On the negative side, it's easy to figure out because you just take a write-down. On the positive, sometimes you have a quarter where you report unusually high earnings too.
Yeah. I wish we were allowed to be more conservative in our reporting. We are not. The auditors are very strict on this in terms of the compliance of the methodology. The volatility in connection with those movements in prices is just a function of the way we're now forced to account for it.
Okay. Okay. The second question is, you talk about copper production going to 60 million pounds a year. Are you saying by the end of 07 or for the average of 07?
We expect to be at an annualized rate by the end of 2007 of that.
Okay. So, you know, if you're ramping up, so let's say you said 40 or 45 million pounds in 06, you know, what's a guesstimate for 07? You're talking more like 50 to 55, ramping up to 60 by the end of 07? Like that's kind of like what you're conceptually thinking about?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's difficult to be precise, but mm-hmm. what we're doing is ramping up the two extractions. The difference, I should say, the difference almost purely is in connection with the extraction and production of copper moly from the Collywood material, and that in turn is dependent upon the successful ramp-up of extraction rates with the two methodologies that I referred to earlier of that material.
Okay. And in your feasibility analysis, you find that the cost of producing, so the additional pounds of copper you're getting from the tailings, would you expect the cash production cost to be equal, greater, or less than your current cost?
Well, You give me a moly price and a copper price, and I can give you.
No. It's all relative. I mean, let's say a ton of material. I'm still talking about generically, right? Let's say, like all things being equal, right? You look at your cost right now, right? Steady state, 66. You said that was 6 cents a pound. It might be lower right now in terms of run rate. When you start doubling production, that extra production on a pound-for-pound basis of rock moved, processed, whatever, and products produced, would you expect the cost to be roughly the same or greater?
I think the simple answer to your question is economies of scale clearly apply here, and all things being equal, as we ramp up that production, there's a significant percentage of fixed costs which will be covered by a greater volume of production, and therefore, theoretically, our unit cost will be lower, all things being equal.
All things being equal. And this last question, on the copper, on the smelting refining charges, are you seeing that they're about the same now, or do you need some leveling off or increasing or seeing some relief?
For copper, the industry-wide deal for 2006 are approximately the same as 2005.
Okay.
But if you study some of the analysts' projections out, with the increased smelting and refining capacity, particularly in China, that is forecast in 2006 and 2007, one would hope that with that increase in capacity that you'll see more smelters and refineries chasing concentrate, and that should reflect itself in a lower rate as we go forward.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. There are no further questions registered at this time. I would like to turn the meeting back over to Mr. Dean.
Well, thank you for listening in, everybody, and thank you for your questions. As I indicated earlier, I think we've had a strong year in earnings, and we hope that to continue to enjoy good prices going forward and continue to deliver along the lines that we've forecast. Thank you.
Thank you. The conference has now ended. Please disconnect your lines at this time. Thank you for your participation, and have a great day.